there are many events, projects and conversations in the WeShare community, and we're doing our little bit here to connect you with even more of them. Come and say hi on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, or use hashtag WeShareRadio.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
It's actually tangible, very changing our lives.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We're here for in the WeShare Radio Luxury Euston studio for another 50 Coffees in London. And I've got Stephanie Davis, who I found on Instagram, I think. I keep on thinking, I feel like I knew before this, but it is Instagram. So, Stephanie, what are you known for and what would you like to be known for?
Good question. So, at the moment, I help people live a better life after cancer. And I do that through coaching, workshops and support groups.
And then what would you like to be known for?
Oh yeah,
she's, people dodge that question.
That's really hard. I guess the cancer work, and also a few years ago I went to Patagonia and published a book. So yeah, in a sentence, I'm not really sure.
that's a good segue, because I think you're underselling yourself there, because you're like this will make sense in my head, because I got attracted to this conversation because there was like Patagonia freelance and the cancer workshop, and there is a connection there, because I love, you know, like my wife's Argentinian, so I'm addicted to that type of thing. And then Matty, who runs who started one of the founders of European Freelancers Week last year, got really serious cancer halfway through, and then he's a linchpin in the whole, you know, European event, and then he got cancer, and while it affected how the whole week played out, what it did bring attention to was like how many people in Europe don't have healthcare and everything. And he did I've still got to write it. I was going to do this books. It was like how to make €50,000 as a freelancer, and that's because his crowdfunding campaign. I've got the blessing to do this blog, but I was thinking of attracting, you know, something to the whole issue of when, you know, the journey of cancer. And it was just, I'm stumbling because it was like really emotional how many people chipped in to his crowdfunding campaign. In like 4 days, he raised like €40,000, which
wow,
is not an it was like, wow, you know, people really do care about him and this whole thing. So that was huge. So what is, how did you, tell us a little about the Patagonia thing, because I'm obsessed with that.
Just
for my benefit and the other two people that like Argentina.
So I guess in brief, how many years ago? Let's say 5 years ago, yeah. I was working at an agency. I was working towards my dream role, working at a design agency, and I guess the reality didn't really match up to what was in my head. So after 2 or 3 years there, I've always kind of done my own stuff, you know, worked on side projects, I studied design, ended up making jewellery for a little bit, and I had this idea to head to Patagonia, which was just going to be a couple of weeks with a friend, well, my best friend, who is an illustrator, and we just find out a little bit more. And my nan had told me about these Welsh people who lived in Argentine Patagonia. Yeah, and, you know, she gave me a book, I never read it, just, I was just quite curious to find out what's going on, so... Yeah, I ended up just quitting my job, and I was like, I just want to do this. My friend couldn't make it in the end, so I went over on my own, ended up spending 3 months over in South America. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I just took a camera, well, I bought a camera, and ended up recording the interviews that I had with these people. And honestly, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, do you know? I was just having conversations and trying to work out what the colony looked like now. And, you know, what were the stories that their great-grandparents had told them? So I came back to the UK and made a website. And, that website ended up being used for Key Stage 2 children in Wales to educate them about what that colony now looks like.
Wow.
And the stories that were kind of handed down.
I remember
down.
You saying that's, like, huge. That's a market recognition.
Yeah, and Lucy Burns... my friend who illustrated the whole project. So basically, you know, there are lots of great books out there about the story, but I want to be really tight, condensed, you know, a couple of sentences in terms of what had happened.
Yeah.
So we created this timeline on the website, And then there was a video linked to each, you know, topic that can happen in the last 150 years. We were quite lucky because I met the Welsh Select Committee out there, some MPs who support the project. So
were they in a bar or something?
Yeah. Well, I just kind of met them for dinner, and they were very supportive of the project. Created the website, lots and lots of work, and then a publisher approached to turn it into a book. So obviously, how could I turn that down? Do you know? Incredible. I'd never kind of, that wasn't my intention to do anything like that, but I couldn't say no to it. So Lucy illustrated the book, and I worked with the designer to, yeah, make it look all lovely. And I had to drop lots of, I was freelancing at the time, kind of managing, you know, this, I got Arts Council funding and Kickstarter funding, yep. But it didn't actually make any money, as in, you know, I wanted to pay everyone properly to do the work. So I got offered a job at BBC to basically do what I was doing, to get a condensed research and make it.
BBC people, they always show up.
I know, and I couldn't take it, because I was like, no, I need to make the book work. Anyway, and then the publishers dropped the book, because they said I didn't meet deadlines, and I met deadlines, like I wouldn't let them drop. So I ended up with this book with no publisher. And I was like, what? I didn't even want this in the first place, do you know? So I was kind of caught up in this situation. And then in that September of the 150th anniversary, I was talking at a book festival about the book that I didn't have published. And I was very honest. I wasn't really sure what story to tell. You know, do I just pretend that I've got a publisher? And I literally called every publisher in Wales, and they were like, you're having a laugh. We can't get this done in time. Or am I
so
honest?
So quite a short list.
Yeah, I think they're actually more than...
They're all on the same streak.
And, so I was just really honest. And I told the story, and I just said, oh, and the publisher dropped the book. Because what else could I do? And there was a publisher in the audience, and he said, I'll publish it for you. I mean, I couldn't have been any luckier.
So is what did you... Because what you've just described is... There's about five people who I know are working on film documentaries or books, and it's like this all-consuming thing, and they don't know whether to... Like, I'm always like, just push through. My big push is things like podcasts, which is a bit different from a book or a whole blown documentary, but it's like, push through, you'll find a way. And what do you think people should do? Do you agree with my advice?
Yeah, absolutely. Just keep...
You're allowed to disagree.
Right? No, I agree. Just keep... I mean, there were people on that journey who said, you know, maybe it's just not meant to be. But how can you put all the energy into something and not... I had to have a full stop, do you know? Yeah. And whether that was me printing myself through Amazon or something, do you know? Like, for me, I couldn't not do anything with this. Definitely keep going, you know, keep knocking on doors until you find a yes.
And how did, I'm trying to find the segue into this, but I'm not going to do it very elegantly. So like, as all that was going on, what's the connection between birthing that project and keeping the freelance life?
Yeah. So just making sure
freelance life going,
making sure you can pay the bills and you're doing your creative work and the stuff that makes you happy, you know. It was hard, and you know that your head is constantly consumed by the stuff that you love, and you just gotta go and do that 9-to-5 job.
It's and what have you, when maybe people say, oh, freelancer now, because I probably wasn't until 2012 or 2013 I thought it was okay to be like, I'm a freelancer, you know. It would be, you know, easier to come out of so many things. But, you know, being a freelancer was a really kind of, isn't that like secret code for can't get a job? And now it's a very different, you know, what's your experience of how people understand freelancing or identify as that now?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely changed over the years. And I guess it's just a word, isn't it? It's just a label. I'd say I'm more self-employed than freelance, and that's probably from my experience of when I say it. Yeah, people, I feel like they judge, you can't get work. And I mean, all of us, we're so busy. Does it really matter what the other person thinks?
Yeah, in my head, I wouldn't put this on a business card or anything like that, but you know, I feel like I'm an independent economic agent, you know, like a project seeker.
That's a great title.
Yeah, is that good? That's okay.
Project seeker. Project seeker.
Yeah. Instigator. But that's what I've always done is like, even when I was employed, I'd always have like two jobs. For a long time, I worked in event catering and in a nightclub. And it just seemed totally, maybe there's like, you know, some personality for it, but it was always like, oh, I've got to have like a lot of things going on, you know, for whatever deep psychological reason that is. So how did you go from writing book? One last thing about Patagonia. I know the Polish community really well in Argentina, and there's a Polish camp in Cordoba which my wife and friends would go to, and some of our friends have got married in the hills in this Polish camp, and when we go there, it is more Polish than when we go to Krakow. Like, yeah. Was that
the same? Yeah, very much
so. Can you say a bit about that? Because I love that kind of...
Yeah, well, I can speak Welsh and understand it, but it was pure Welsh. And there were words that I'm sure they would have spoken 150 years ago in Wales, but I didn't know what they meant. And they do things like... They have Welsh tea rooms, which we don't have in Wales. It's more of an English, you know, going for like an afternoon tea. Yeah, and they're so proud of it, you know. They meet up for mate and just to practice their Welsh, making sure the younger generation are learning it. They have Welsh dance, which you don't really see in Wales unless it's your Eisteddfod.
Yeah. And are they like keeping the dream alive, or like there's something really necessary and romantic about that kind of like hanging on to the culture of where they come from?
Yeah, there's definitely a struggle, you know. I think there's the group of people in Wales who are kind of pretending that like, no, oh, it's great and they're speaking Welsh, but it's hard, you know. They've got lots of Welsh teachers who go over, and the government pays for them to go over to teach in the Welsh schools
in Buenos Aires. In Argentina.
But it's hard, you know, and you wouldn't walk down the street and hear it. You know, you will have Welsh tea rooms and they will speak Welsh, but you'd have to go into a home to really hear it.
But so a Welsh tea room in Argentina must be like an Argentine restaurant or a Polish restaurant. There's like three places, there's probably more now, but there's like, when I first got married, there were like three places in Argentina, in London, sorry, where you could buy mate, and there was like five Polish restaurants, and now they're everywhere. But it was like this quest in London to find... Basically, you know, for the first few years of our marriage, it was like a quest to find mate and pierogi, because that's what we're into. So finding, you know, you can imagine like Argentine people on this quest to find the best Welsh tea room in Argentina. Yeah, it's like a small guidebook.
Yeah.
so how did you get from doing a book on Patagonia with being a free... Is it right to say coaching freelancers?
So I started off coaching freelancers, self-employed, small business owners. And yeah, that was because that's my history, I guess. That's kind of what they're the people I love being around. And I guess they're typically working on their own creative projects. So it's finding that balance between paid work and the work that they want to spend more time doing.
That's an ongoing quest here.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was because that project... the book was launched from the House of Commons, and I think out because the MP supported it, so I was quite lucky with that. And I was like, I'm never going to get that from a 9-to-5 job. Do you know, it doesn't matter that this made nothing, that experience in itself, you know, and the support that people gave me, people who invested in the funding, that doesn't come from working for someone else.
Like, I'm so glad you dropped that back in there. That's quite a key thing to the whole...
What's that?
Like launching the book at the House of Commons and the crescendo of the...
Because thing. I think, yeah, it really was like, come on, I'm not going to work for someone and that's going to happen, you know? It was about relationships and about that support. So from that, it was a bit of a, how are you going to go back into this kind of full-time work role? So I...
How do you... Was it like, how am I going to go back into a full-time work role, or like, what do I do next, or how do I top this, or what was the little...
I felt like I needed a rest because it was so full on from doing that. And Yeah, so for me, a rest felt like working 5 days a week for someone else. Even, I know,
but it's the truth. To watch, like, yeah, a movie.
No, just, it's easier working for someone else, don't you think? It's, you know, if you're sat in an office, you just, it feels like to a certain point, you go in, do the work, go home, and you don't think about it. When you're working on your own thing, your brain doesn't stop.
It is, I just can't. Like, I love that. There's this cute phrase, like, unemployable. So I like working, I really like working with people, but I hate working for someone because it gets this whole kind of, well, you're supposed to be here at 9, you know, if it's like, you know, if we're doing something together, like, let's kick off at 9, you know, like, let's kick off at 9 and our thing is a very different conversation in my little bit in my brain that does that than you have to be here at 9 or else, you know, that's why I'd rather have the pain of my brain never stopping than the pain of getting told off for being 2 minutes late.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for me, I think I just needed I needed my brain to turn off at 5, 6 o'clock so I didn't have to think about anything. This is what, I mean, but this was me not checking in with myself in terms of this is not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
Do you know? So I quickly realized that. And for me, I've done lots of projects that I've had a full stop and I wanted to work on something that was me kind of set for not the rest of my life, but a long, long, long period of time, do you know? Mm-hmm. And that for me was more of a business or a kind of community interest kind of project.
That's a, I want to hang there a little bit. Like, something I nearly started working on and I didn't. And the person running, it was a podcast project, and they said, could you commit to this for 5 years? And I went, oh, yeah, sure, you know. Like, and then when we went back and examined it, it wasn't like, I don't want to work with you for 5 years. I thought, actually, no, I'm not, I don't know how to commit, other than my family, of course, but I don't know how to commit to something professionally for 5 years at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But then if it's your own project and you can create whatever you want it to be, which is what I learned from the Patagonia project, was, you know, to a certain extent, you can only control some of it.
Yeah.
But what do I want my week to look like? How do I want to spend my time? If it can be absolutely anything, and who knows, in a year's time, it might change. But that thread of it being, for me, the cancer and the coaching is still there, but it can be quite organic. That works for me, you know. Yep. So I wasn't committing to just, okay, it has to be, you're just going to deliver one workshop for the rest of your life. You know, it's not that. It's, I want to help people who've had cancer, and I don't know what that looks like exactly, but it will keep evolving over time.
So in that, like, I don't know what it looks like exactly. Is that, mm-hmm. have you taught yourself how to work out, you're committed to that, and then work out what that will look like and how that will evolve is the word I'm looking for. Because there's a skill there of going, I know I'm going to podcast for a long time. It's mm-hmm. like, it's my zone of genius. So whatever you want to call it. But I don't know what I'm going to be podcasting about this time next year, mm-hmm. but I know I'm going to be doing that.
Yeah.
And I know, I'm feeling quite confident at this hour that I'll know how to evolve that thing. I don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you are with, kind of gave you the answer to,
the question.
So, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, it's about always checking in with myself in terms of where do I want to spend my time? What feels right for me? For me, it's about like listening to my body, because I feel like if I take that time, I really know what the answer is, and not jumping ahead to, you know, maybe at a certain point, I want to be able to do this and work in another country, or maybe I want to deliver a workshop in a hospital. And, you know, so it's, how do I make sure that all the elements kind of line up for me?
So you say checking in with yourself, which I think is a really important thing to do. But how do you describe your checking in process and stuff? Is it like weekly, yearly?
Oh no,
every decade.
Yeah, every week at least, mm-hmm. maybe daily, or definitely a couple of times a week. You know, and for me, I have to have a very clear headspace and. I mean, in London, do you know, we're running around constantly, so you have to make sure you take the time, and exercise really helps with that. I try and, so if I even just skip for 15 minutes a day and...
Skip?
Yep, skip and rope, I know. When I was in Thailand, I told a lady that, she thought I literally, like, you know, like, what's it called? Like when you skip down, like there. A little child skip around the office.
Holding hands for Regent's Park.
She's like, oh, that's so cute. I'm like, no, with a rope. I meditate for 3 minutes a day just because I know I'm not going to do anymore.
Yeah.
And I journal. Well, when I say journal, I've got a 5-minute journal. So it's...
That's sort of like a little list of questions, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, so it's like three things you're grateful for. I know it's really cheesy, but for me, it changes my mindset. You know,
I think it's like... It is really cheesy, but it's so essential.
Yeah, and three things that you would like to achieve today.
Mm-hmm.
And just checking in at the end of the day. You know, so it feels like you're planting the seed at the start of the day. And also, where do I want to spend my time today? What, you know... Because we can do anything and we get quite lost in spending it on the wrong things, I think. Especially when you're working on your own work. It's if someone isn't there going, exactly like you said in those Monday morning meetings, you just said you want to be doing this.
Yeah.
But you've just spent half a day doing that. What's going on?
I think a large portion of my freelance life career has been working out, realising how much I lie blatantly to myself every day.
Yeah, and Google Calendar is my... Like, I literally don't know what I'm doing without that.
That's a big part of, like, the Not-So-Manic Monday thing. And like, I'm doing this course with a lady called Jessica Abel at the moment about... it's called the Creative Focus Workshop. And the first two is amazing. And the first two things is, like, where do you spend... You know, two lessons were basically, like, where do you spend your time? And, like, tracking it like a, you know, IBM accountant... And when we get on the group call, everyone's like, I can't believe how much time I didn't devote to, you know, not just like the creative projects, but like my creative work, my work and my family. And then all these other things of like that just appear out of nowhere. And it's, I think I just struggle with that anyway, but like that's, you know, just being aware of where your time goes is huge.
Yeah, and in order to be aware, you have to make sure you carve just a little bit of time out of your day to just take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess it's like, how much more time do you gain by just stopping for 15 minutes just to have a... I think people think, oh no, if I stop, then I'm going to drop something or da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like, oh, let's just like sit down for a minute here and...
That is with like the meditation thing. I found it really, really, really hard to do that. Because that's another one of these things where people go, oh, I just meditate, you know, 20 minutes a day. And like actually sitting still for 3 minutes is really hard.
Yeah.
And the amount of times when I just go and like put my little app on for like even just 10 minutes and everything settles and I can go off again. Whereas my habit is to just keep going. You know, you can work to 10, you can work to 11, you can get it all done. And like, just there's no point in even trying that thing.
And also just on that is exactly like if you're creating your own week, what's the reason you're choosing to work until 11? You know, as in you can do anything with your day because it's your time and you're creating it. So do you want to be doing that? I think often we don't ask ourselves, do I want to be working till 11 or would I rather be doing something else? Because even though it's the work that we love...
I definitely don't. And now that's it. When I am doing that, I can see like I've chosen to do this because I love what I want to do, which is hardly ever, or I just haven't done what I said I was going to do. I heard this really cute quote of... There's someone talking about like, you know, their nomadic freelance product. Led life, and they went, oh yeah, I make money while I sleep, but I work 12 hours a day, because they kind of miss the point of like being in charge of your own time.
Yeah.
Well, I want to jump onto the cancer workshop, because that's a huge that's your main gig now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're a freelance cancer, is it a survivor? Is that the life after cancer is the title? But what would you call yourself?
I call myself a coach.
Yep.
So I started Life After Cancer last year and we offer coaching, workshops, support groups, and I collaborate with a yoga teacher to offer free yoga classes to people who've had cancer. So the important bit, I guess, is that I support people after they've had cancer treatment.
Yep.
There's lots of great support out there for people who've had cancer, but I feel like You know, NHS are absolutely incredible. And to a certain extent, you know, just take this with a pinch of salt, but when you have got cancer, the structure is applied there for you. No, you turn it to your appointment. You're having this on this day. There's not too many choices. So you don't have to think too much about what you need to do. Of course, like, your mind is super, super busy and there's so much going through it. But when you come to your end of treatment, I kind of compare it to when someone really close to you passes away and you've had your funeral, and it's a bit of a tap on the back of like, cool, it's all over now, go back into the real world. And more so in London, this crazy city, that, you know, you step back out and you're not the person you were before, and you're probably not going to be, but people think you are. You try and cling on to who you were, and, oh, I don't do these things anymore.
When we were talking about this first and you said that, like, I, you know, people in half my family have died of cancer, and I know people, but when you said that, I was like, oh yeah, you know, like, you're not the, like, to go even to go through quite a bad cold for me is traumatic and life-changing. So, like, going through all the steps that go, you know, to get to, you know, I haven't got cancer anymore, and, oh, you haven't got cancer anymore, okay, on with the next thing. Exactly. It's not like that.
Yeah.
I'm imagining it not to be like that, sorry.
Yeah, and it's I mean, I think you will be, but when it gets to that point, of course, and suddenly it's all sinking in, because that process of, you know, finding out you've got cancer, you start treatment pretty fast. You know, that whole thing is one after, you know, another thing. Then you're like, whoa, this has just happened to me. I need to take a step back, but people need to understand that I need a bit of space to work out. Who am I now? What are my values, priorities? You know, do I want to be in an office where someone's moaning about the photocopier not working when I've just, how can I compare it to what has just happened?
That was one of my clumsy questions is, like, when, I didn't know, like, things I've been through, my perspective, and, you know, I stopped worrying about what brand of t-shirt or, you know, hair gel I'm using. And because I'm worried about more, you know, bigger things, things that you, like, universally agree to be big deals, like, you know, family and why am I here and everything like that. So do people, how do people deal with that bit? Like, when there's someone going, oh, well, I don't know where to go, to Starbucks or Costa, you know, when that's there at bay, it's like, listen, mate, I've just like, you know, had three tumours removed and I'm glad to be alive. So, like, I don't care, you know, that whole area of it. How do people deal with that?
Well, firstly, I mean, it's important to remember that we're all human, so that conversation will happen, and that we do also get caught up in that, even if you've, you know, been through that experience or not, or anything else, that we all get caught up in those tiny things, and sometimes we need something bigger to remind us of, well, it's not important. But the biggest thing that I hear come out of, let's say, the support groups is that people don't talk to people who haven't had cancer because they don't feel like they get it. And that, the get it keeps coming up a lot in our groups of people don't hear them, you know, they're talking, but they're just not been heard. And then you feel like, what's the point? Because I'm not getting, you know, they're not getting it. And I think on the other side of it, it's really difficult for people to know what to say to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they say, not the wrong thing, they say what they think is right, but it doesn't make the other person feel very good. So that whole awkward kind of, oh, I'm saying the wrong thing, you're offending me, it's not what I want to hear. So the conversation just doesn't end up happening, or it doesn't carry on, you know. So I think communication is key. And
do people get what, like, so in life after cancer, are people, like, angry or grateful, or what are the kind of emotions that are present in your groups?
A complete range. I found that on my side, because I had cancer very young, I was 15, 16 years, so it was 16 years ago for me, that it shaped who I am, but probably, I probably didn't really realise that because I was a teenager,
yeah.
That I'm really grateful, because I really do believe it's everything, well, not everything, sometimes things are quite black and white for me in life. I want it, I've got to go and get it because I'm still here. But I've found that that actually really annoys lots of people because there are so many people who are angry about it, you know, that they hate that person who, like, oh, you're grateful, it's great, you got this life. It's like, no, actually, cancer's pretty shit.
And what was the, you said it helped shape who you are and you alluded it to a little bit there, like, yeah. I'll just go out and get it. But, like, how do you think it shaped who you are?
Because I survived.
Yeah.
And I'm still here and I might not have been. And I don't think about that too much, but I'm not sure if I wouldn't have had cancer that one, I was brought up in West Wales. I don't know if I would have made the jump to move to London 11 years ago. Working on my own projects. I just think it's given me a bit more energy to kind of make sure I get what I want from my life. In not a selfish way, but just to work that.
You're all deliberate.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and to go out and get what you want rather than just living a kind of, not a mediocre life, because I don't want to imply that everyone else does, but it's just, I feel very much like, I've got this life, like, what can I get from it? And when I leave, I need to have made a change, or I love travelling, I need to have travelled to all of, you know, I need to make sure I've kind of done all of these things.
I'm like, knocking around at the back of my head as you're saying that is, I do feel... And I feel, it's not the first time I said it on this podcast, like a little bit judgmental is that people sort of, you know, go to school, they sleepwalk in, you know, in obviously around the world, but in the context of the UK, you know, they go to school, they sleepwalk into A-levels, they sleepwalk into university, because mm-hmm. that's what you do after A-levels, and they like sleepwalk into a job, and then 40 years later, they've been commuting in something that they don't not like, mm-hmm. you know. I don't actually meet many people that go, I really hate what I do, but they just... do that,
yeah,
you know, and they could, you could sort of follow that thing, but, you know, study something you really like, go and study something you really like, and go and do something you really like, but you kind of might have missed it by 4 degrees because you were just, didn't even know you were alive.
Yeah, that's it, and it's about waking up, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just realizing that, I think it's not anyone's fault that that's the path we take, and it's quite easy that we don't lift our head and go, whoa, like, I'm on this kind of treadmill, and just, I mean, for me, that is versus the kind of freelance self-employed life, isn't it, of, I don't know, I'm being really negative now, but I feel like it's quite easy to work a kind of 5-day-a-week job, you know, like, to carve out doing something that you love and finding that time working. You know, like you said, you work till 11 o'clock sometimes, whether you want to or not, like, you have to put extra hours in to make it work. Yeah, it's just about coming back to what you want your life to look like. And if that's what you want, great. But for me, I'm not happy. I feel sad, do you know, if I'm not making sure I'm doing those things.
There's a lot of, you know, this morning when I was doing my little 750 words journal, and I woke up in and like, you know, oh God, you know, and then like wrote out, why are you so pissed off with yourself today, you know, because you're working on one, you're podcasting with Steph Davis.
Yeah, I don't want to get to work today.
yeah, so you know, went through all these things. It's like, actually, this is exactly what you wanted, you know, because it is, life is tough today, in inverted commas, because you have to like do these blogs and do these podcasts and have this thing. So like you've chosen what's going on today. Okay, so that's why it's inconvenient. Which is very different from like I've got to be at, you know, in Holborn to work in that restaurant I used to work in from 9 till 5, and I'm at someone else's mercy. And I always worked for really good people. I didn't have any jobs I hated, but I didn't like being controlled in the daytime. And now I'm my own thing. And if I do, the only reason today to work later is if I don't do stuff at the schedule I've set, which is, you know, my own thing. And then, but I know today, why I started saying that, sorry, is today will work really well because I'm working on my stuff and I've got this like super energy from nowhere because I love it. Whereas if I'm working on a deadline for someone else, it's, I don't know, on something I can do but I don't particularly like, you know, I kind of drag it out to to punish myself.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up, is like, how do you coach people? Like, what's the Do people come to you one-to-one, or do you run groups, or?
Yeah, so I offer one-to-one coaching. So I work with a London-based hospital. So I coach young people there, young adults. And I work with a couple of cancer charities doing one-to-one coaching, and I deliver workshops for them as well. I deliver my own workshops on various kind of areas. I'm working on a kind of life after cancer workshop with a hospital at the moment. So a kind of 6-week program taking you from, you know, A to Z. So it's a bit more structured, not like the online courses.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I offer free...
Get over cancer in 6 easy weeks.
I offer free support groups in Walthamstow, and a coach that I've worked with is now running the same support group in Greenwich. So that's a free group, and it's not a support group, it's a space where people who've had cancer kind of hang out, and we do it once a month. And then I work with a yoga teacher, and that's a free yoga group.
That must be quite when I first saw that, you have to be quite brave to go to I haven't been to one, you know. It's quite a big step going to something like Alcoholics Anonymous or something, which was the topic of our last podcast. But, going to cancer, because sitting in a room with people must be like comforting and quite scary at the same time. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the groups are quite lighthearted. So they might joke about, I always use my cancer card to get away with stuff, you know. And then, for example, last week was, let's say it was quite heavy and most of us were tearing up, you know, and there was a lot of anger, like the right kind of anger, you know.
And is it the same group of people every week, or does it like change?
It changes, yeah. There's a few ladies who are always there. I'd say ladies because it's majority ladies.
Because men are rock hard.
They are, aren't they?
We don't need support of other people.
It changes. And we have such a great time. It's a really lovely group.
I feel that would be a really special place to be, because it's, you know, like, well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this is like, you know, when you connect with a group of people, whether it's like in a course or, like one of the best things we do here is in work clubs is those meetups. And on the front of it, it's like, I'm coming to do this, but it's all the little water cooler conversations and sharing and connecting around. Like, even people talk about stationery here, and that seems like such a futile thing. Like, oh yeah, I work much better on it. You too. I thought it was just me that liked A3. In fact, I unlocked my creativity. So, and other little support groups I've had to go to, like, you know, finding your people is such a huge thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're spot on. It's about community. And for me, it's about, you know, the support groups in Walthamstow. So I just really want people to know that, you know, your next door neighbour might have had cancer, and that's something you can connect over, do you know? But we don't even know who lives next door, let alone who's had cancer in our village, do you know, in London. So for me, it's about bringing these people together. And it's so lovely when you get a couple of people walking through the door laughing and joking because they found someone who gets it, and they can talk about it, and they can have a little cry, or they can express their joy or anger, whatever it is, just with each other. And we can actually listen to each other and hear that.
That is a great place to end, because I can where could we find you in Walthamstow or Greenwich? That's because we're in London, and this is 50 Coffees in London.
If you visit the website, so it's life-aftercancer.co.uk.
Link in the show notes.
Yeah, and so we've got support groups and workshops and yoga and all of the lovely stuff on there. So.
And where's Steph online? Where's the best place to track you and hunt you down and?
You can visit the website, stephdavis.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably the best. Or you can drop me an email, but I'm sure
we'll find out. Thank you very much for
that. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you.